It's good to be back to see all of you guys again. It feels like it's been forever, literally, since we've been here. I know that Anthony filled in for me, so I want to thank him for doing that. Thought he did a good job. Listened to the lesson that he went through. Feels a little weird coming up here and going, starting from material that I didn't actually present or teach to take over from that point, but that's what we're going to do. I know Anthony got almost to the end of chapter 5 and left off with talking about how Jesus was proving who he is, and those that would testify or the testimony on his behalf. Actually, I'm going to mention something now because I'm afraid I'll forget about it later and I'll step down and think, oh, I should have said something. So this is not a, I want to say it's not a big deal, but it might be a big deal. So I've had a pinched nerve on my right side for about 2 months. And that's one of those things as you get older, those things happen, you just ignore them and go, ah, it'll go away. And it didn't. And it's been about 2 months. So I went to the doctor and they started me on some therapy, which is also what happens when you get old. And so that hasn't really done any good. So I actually had an appointment when I got back from Florida on Tuesday morning where they did some acupuncture, hoping that will do something, because so far what we've done has not had any impact at all. What does it mean? I've just got that tingly, wonderful feeling that goes all the way down from my neck all the way down to my fingertips, pretty much 24/7. So it's not really pleasant, but it's not painful. But it needs to be solved, because if it's not solved, it can lead to worse things. So I would ask you to pray for me, and hopefully that will be impactful. So, okay. So let's go into our lesson. Sorry to start with that, but I'm afraid I would forget it if I went through the lesson. All right, so I know we're in John chapter 5. We were near the end. And again, Jesus is trying to prove who he is. And he's saying, these are the things that testify to who I am. And so there are four things that testify who Jesus is. What were those four things? So this is kind of a mini review. I know Anthony was just finishing on that pointer. Or getting into that point. What are those four things? He says it wouldn't do any good if he testified about himself.
So I wasn't here, but John testified his words for a testimony, the Father's testimony, and then the Scriptures testified.
Okay. So he's giving them plenty of reasons, right? He's saying, hey, look, John the Baptist testified about me. The works I'm doing are testifying who I am. The Father has testified to who I am. And the Scripture, Moses, testified to who I am. But you don't believe these things. I know Anthony brought this up, so I'm actually going to put him on the spot. So he said there's at least three times where John mentions that there is Moses referencing Jesus. So, Anthony, I'm putting you on the spot.
Yeah, so I cheated a little bit and I used your notes. But the three times that were there, in chapter 1, verse 45, Philip finds Nathanael and says, we found him with whom Moses and the law and also the prophets wrote, Jesus of Nazareth, which I think is a reference mainly back to Deuteronomy 18, when he talks about a prophet that was going to come after him, which they accepted to be the Messiah.
So Jesus could have just said the prophets or the Old Testament or the law or that whatever he wanted to reference, because all of the scripture is really referencing him. But he went to specifically Moses because he knew that that would have an impact upon them. So those are some examples for Moses. I don't want feel like we need to spend more time on that. Again, Jesus gave them lots of reasons why they should believe in him, and they didn't seem to want to believe in him. Okay, so let's go into the next chapter, John chapter 6. I put the Gospels, the various sections that reference, because it's referenced, again, lots of John is unique. He doesn't reference things that the Synoptic Gospels reference. In this case, we do have events that are recorded in the other Gospels, so we want to take a look at those. Hopefully you read through those sections and looked at how those brought different information to the forefront. I want to think just a little bit about what's happening at this point in time in the book of John. Okay, if you look at the beginning of chapter 5, in verse 1, it says, "After this there was a feast of the Jews, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem." So the events of that chapter are occurring in Jerusalem at the time of a feast. Okay, now we go into chapter 6, and if you look at chapter 6, verse 4, we see that it's the time of the Passover, and Jesus is in Galilee. So some time has passed between chapter 5 and chapter 6. And sometimes when we're reading through Scripture, and we're just reading, and we're reading, and reading through, we may not realize the gaps of time that are occurring. Sometimes we read it, and it's just like, well, that's the next thing that happened, and that's the next thing that happened, that's the next thing that happened. There are gaps of time going on here in John's Gospel. And so there's two different feasts that have happened, one in chapter 5 and one in chapter 6. I want to look at preparing ourselves here for... Hang on one second. Preparing ourselves for where chapter 6 begins. So if we looked at the other Gospels, here's some things that we would note. In Luke chapter 9, verse 1 and 2, we would see that Jesus had sent out the 12 everywhere, and they were going out for the purpose of proclaiming the kingdom and healing. So that's where they've been. In verse 10, they have returned from that mission. Okay? In Matthew chapter 14, verse 12, we see that John the Baptist had been beheaded during this time. And so when the apostles are returning to Jesus, they're bringing this news to him. In Mark 6, verse 31, Jesus says to them that they need a place, a desolate place to rest. So he takes them in the boat, and they're going to head away so they have a chance to rest. And that's where chapter 6 kicks in. And then we're going to have this giant crowd. So think about those things that have happened. The disciples, the apostles, have been out teaching and proclaiming and healing. They come back. I'm sure they're tired from all that work, right? Because Jesus even says they need a chance to rest. They also have found out that John the Baptist has been beheaded, so that's troubling news. They have to deliver that to Jesus. That's troubling news to him, even though he knows. Still troubling news. So this is what's happening kind of in the background when we start off with the chapter here. The crowds are relentless, right? They are continuing to follow and to seek and to come after and not allowing them that time to rest. So when Jesus gets in the boat with the disciples and they're going across to find a place to rest, what happens is the crowds who are seeking them because of the signs and the healing, they find out where they're at. They run ahead on foot, and they're waiting for him when they get there on the shore. So that rest time, they didn't get it. Okay? And those things impact, right? When we think about who we are and how we feel when we're exhausted, when we're tired, and what do we want to do? Do we want to be around people? I don't want to be around people, right? We want a chance to be by ourselves and relax. They're not going to get that time. All right. So we're going to get to a question here. What I'm going to try and do is lay out for you some of what's happening in the different texts and put it all together for you so you can see kind of when you fill all that in together what's happening. Why does Jesus test Philip and how is he testing him? So let's read there first from these different sections and see if we can get what's going on. And actually, maybe I should read from John first. So let's do that first. We'll read John 6 first several verses, and then we'll launch into what I was going to do here. All right, John chapter 6, verse 1. After this, Jesus went away to the other side of the Sea of Galilee, which is the Sea of Tiberias. And a large crowd was following him because they saw the signs that he was doing on the sick. Jesus went up on the mountain, and there he sat down with his disciples. Now the Passover, the feast of the Jews, was at hand. Lifting up his eyes then, and seeing that a large crowd was coming toward him, Jesus said to Philip, "Where are we to buy bread, so that these people may eat?" He said this to test him, for he himself knew what he would do. Philip answered him, 200 denarii worth of bread would not be enough for each of them to get a little. One of his disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, said to him, "There's a boy here who has 5 barley loaves and 2 fish. And Jesus said, "Have the people sit down." Oh, I'm sorry, I missed a spot. No, I didn't. Let me read that again. I missed the spot. One of his disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, said to him, "There's a boy here who has 5 barley loaves and 2 fish. But what are they for so many?" Jesus said, "Have the people sit down." Now there was much grass in the place. So the men sat down, about 5,000 in number. We'll stop there just for the moment. Okay, so let's take a look at what's happening. I'm reading through this in John, and when I read through the other Gospels, I thought, man, you get a very different feel reading through Matthew, Mark, and Luke than you do reading through John. And I was trying to fit all this, in my mind, all this information together. So I found it, when I did it for myself, it made more clarity for myself. So hopefully it will for you as well. Luke chapter 9, verse 12. The 12 came and said to Jesus, "Send the crowd away to go into the surrounding villages and countryside to find lodging and get provisions, for we are here in a desolate place." But Jesus said, "They need not go away. You give them something to eat." And they said to him, "Shall we go and buy 200 denarii worth of bread and give it to them to eat?" Jesus said to Philip, "Where are we to buy bread so that these people may eat?" Philip answered him, 200 denarii worth of bread would not be enough food for each of them to get a little. When you read it like this, does it change how you see it versus just reading it in John? It does for me. Because those pieces are all there, but when you fit it together, it changes to me when he turns to Philip. Okay? The apostles, the 12, are asking Jesus, "Shall we go and buy 200 denarii worth of bread and give it to them to eat?" I don't know where they came up with that number from. Maybe that's how much money they had. I don't know. Jesus turns to Philip and says, "Where are we to buy bread?" Why would Jesus turn to Philip? He could have asked any of the 12. Why did he turn to Philip? Correct.
But, I don't know, he's a local. I mean, that's the only thing that I can gather. I'm trying to look at his origin story.
Yeah, I don't know that there's one reason per se. I think that probably led into it to some degree. He's a local. He knows the area. He's from Bethsaida. So he should know where they could go and get food to buy. Okay? Does Jesus tend to test his disciples? Is this something new, or does he tend to do this? He does this, right? A lot. He tests them a lot. So it's another test. He selects Philip. He probably had his reasons for that. One of them might be that Philip was from Bethsaida. One of them might be that maybe Philip needed more developing than the others. I don't know that. But take a look at this, if you would. Turn to John chapter 14, verse 8 through 11. So this is a little ways down the road. I'll let you absorb the context just for a second while I get there. All right, so Jesus is saying, I am the way and the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. If you had known me, you would have known my Father also. From now on, you do know him and have seen him. Verse 8. Philip said to him, Lord, show us the Father, and it is enough for us. Jesus said to him, Have I been with you so long, and you still do not know me, Philip? Whoever has seen me has seen the Father. How can you say, show us the Father? Do you not believe that I am in the Father, and the Father is in me? The words that I say to you I do not speak of my own authority, but the Father who dwells in me does his works. Believe in me that I am in the Father, and the Father is in me, or else believe on account of the works themselves. So I'm thinking that Philip needed some developing in his faith, because this is down the road a little ways, and Jesus is saying to him, do you still not get that the Father is in me and I am in him? So I think Philip's from Bethsaida. Jesus tests his disciples, and Philip may have needed more developing. And I think Jesus always knew who needed what, right? Just like a parent knows his kids, who needs what in order to help develop them and move them along. So I think that probably was some of the reasons why he selected Philip. Any thoughts that you had besides those, besides what Anthony shared and what we shared up here? Okay. All right. How did the crowd respond to seeing Jesus feed such a large crowd? All right, let's take a look back in John 6. If you need to go back to there. We'll pick up in verse 11. Jesus then took the loaves, and when he had given thanks, he distributed them to those who were seated. So also the fish, as much as they wanted. And when they had eaten their fill, he told his disciples, "Gather up the leftover fragments, that nothing may be lost." So they gathered them up and filled 12 baskets with fragments from the 5 barley loaves left by those who had eaten. When the people saw the sign that he had done, they said, "This is indeed the prophet who is to come into the world." Okay, what's the crowd's response to seeing Jesus feed such a large crowd?
they believed that he was the prophet, which I think is the same thing that I mentioned in reference to John 18. Moses said the prophet like me. They had manna and the arrow of Moses.
Okay. How many people were actually there that he fed? We always say Jesus fed the 5,000. Was it 5,000 people?
There was more. There were women and children. One of the other accounts.
Right. Right. So there's actually a lot more than 5,000. We don't know how many, but if there's 5,000 men, and then we count women, and then we count children, it's a lot of people, right? Now imagine a crowd. Try to imagine a crowd that large sitting down in this giant area, right? That's a lot of space. I'm sure they weren't sitting on bleachers like we have today, right? So there's going to be some spreading out there as well, so there's going to be a lot of distance there for sure. And they're not going to see that miracle itself occurring, other than they're going to see the impact. They're going to realize, hey, there wasn't any food, now there's food, and wow, look at all this food. Wow, oh, there's leftovers. So that would have had a huge impact for sure. And so, yes, in verse 14, when the people saw the sign he had done, so when they're getting that realization, the rumblings, or however they're understanding that, they say, this is indeed the prophet who is to come into the world. So, Exodus 16, verse 4, that's, if you go back and look at these passages real quick, we'll kind of gather what those references are. And then there's one other, Deuteronomy 18. So Exodus 16, verse 4, I don't know if they would have thought of, I don't know what exactly what they thought of. This could have been one of the things they thought of. Then the Lord said to Moses, behold, I am about to rain bread from heaven for you, and the people shall go out and gather a day's portion every day, that I may test them, whether they will walk in my law or not. So they may have thought of that situation with Moses, where the Lord told him, I'm going to rain bread down from heaven. Because Jesus rained bread, right? There's only this little bit of bread, and all of a sudden there's bread everywhere. Deuteronomy 18, which I think is probably a connection for sure that they made. In verse 15 and in verse 18, the Lord your God will raise up for you a prophet like me from among you, from your brothers. It is to him you shall listen. Verse 18, I will raise up for them a prophet like you from among their brothers, and I will put my words in his mouth, and he shall speak to them all that I command him. Doesn't Jesus constantly say that they're not his words? That he's doing what his Father is telling him to do? Saying what his Father is telling him to say? Right? So, certainly they would have made the connection in Deuteronomy 18. They may have made it from Exodus 16, and there may have been other things that they referenced as they were thinking in their minds, oh, this is the prophet making that connection. Okay, so I did that, and then I thought, as I was moving through this, it actually makes sense to look at that type of chronology, or not chronology, fitting together of the Gospels, to look at the chronology of the next events that are going to occur. So it gets a little confusing, again, to me when I was reading through John, trying to figure out exactly what's happening when. So I liked fitting in the other Gospels to make that make sense. There's only two. There's only Mark or Matthew and Mark. No, Luke does not present this. So John 6, 15 through 21, and then Matthew and then Mark. So we'll read John 6, 15. When I get back to it on my phone, we will. Okay, John chapter 6, verse 15. Perceiving then that they were about to come and take him by force to make him king, Jesus withdrew again to the mountain by himself. When evening came, his disciples went down to the sea, got into a boat, and started across the sea to Capernaum. It was now dark, and Jesus had not yet come to them. The sea became rough because a strong wind was blowing. When they had rowed about 3 or 4 miles, they saw Jesus walking on the sea and coming near the boat, and they were frightened. But he said to them, "It is I, do not be afraid." Then they were glad to take him into the boat, and immediately the boat was at the land to which they were going. Okay. When you read the other Gospels, again, I think it adds a little bit more to this and makes some of these details a little different. John's not doing anything wrong in his presenting of the information, but like when we have 3 or 4 people tell a story, you can tell it accurately and still leave out certain details or add other details that make it sound a little bit different. So that's kind of what we're looking at here. So I'm going to let you share first. I don't know if you did this or not, so if you didn't, that's okay. But did you write down the chronology of all the things as you looked through the three Gospels and said, okay, here's what happened, then here's what happened, then here's what happened, then here's what happened? You want to do that? Want to share that? Okay. I don't know if I got it all right.
So the disciples got in the boat, went to the other side. He told them to go before him. And he dismissed the crowd. Then he went off to the mountain to pray by himself. And then evening came, and he walked out to them on the water, got in the boat, and the storm ceased.
Okay. Any other details that you had in there, or that you had in a different order, or whatever? It takes time. It's not easy to do, to piece all that together and say, well, this piece goes here and this piece goes here. I'll share what I had, and you can make what you will of it. I think there's a little bit unsaid, and I draw that from... let's see, where was that from? I'm losing it looking up at the screen. Okay. John 6:15, it says Jesus withdrew again to the mountain by himself. We haven't seen that happen yet, where he went to the mountain by himself. So I'm thinking, well, how did he go again to the mountain by himself? Must be that he withdrew once to pray. And now he's going back a second time. That's my understanding of it. And then he comes back from praying as the disciples are finished collecting all those leftovers. Would that have taken a while to collect leftovers from 5 to 10,000 people? That would have been a long process, right? That would have taken a while. By the way, as an aside, how much leftovers did they actually pick up? Someone said it. 12 baskets. Anything interesting about that number? Right. So probably the good possibility is each of them had their own basket, which they would have had for traveling purposes, right? And they filled their own basket with the leftovers, filled 12 baskets. 12 people picking up leftovers for 5 to 10,000 people, that would have taken a while to accomplish. I think it's reasonable that Jesus kind of gone off, prayed, and then come back. All right. And they took up 12 baskets full of broken pieces and of the fish, and those who ate the loaves were 5,000 men. Perceiving then that they were about to come and take him by force to make him king. So Jesus comes back. He has this sense like, I'm hearing the rumblings. I'm seeing what's happening. I think they want to make me king. Immediately, he made the disciples get into the boat and go before him to the other side while he dismissed the crowds. This is what I'm seeing is happening. Is he sees this is about to take place. He gets the disciples in the boats. He dismisses the crowd. He goes back up onto the mountain to pray. Okay. Next thing that we notice is it's dark. So this is all happening as the day is fading and it's getting dark. So is it reasonable to think that once Jesus goes back up the mountain, they're going to have a hard time finding him? I think that's reasonable. I don't think they're going to go up there and try and find him in the dark. The sea became rough. Now they're out there on the sea and a strong wind was blowing. When they rowed about 3 or 4 miles, he saw that they were making headway painfully. So Jesus looks out. They've been rowing about 3 or 4 miles. They're having a really difficult time of it. That's not very far, and all the time that's passed. How do I know how much time has passed? For the wind was against them, and about the 4th watch of the night, he came to them walking on the sea. What time would that have made it, roughly, 4th watch of the night? The watches were 3 hours, okay? So the 4th watch is going to be 3 to 6 in the morning. So sometime in that 3 to 6 in the morning is when this is happening. If they left when it got dark, or roughly when it got dark, they've been out there a long time, right? So now you can understand painful headway to get 3 or 4 miles rowing into the wind. So now he walks out to them on the sea. He means to pass by them, so it's his intention to just keep going, walk right by them. But when they saw him walking on the sea, they thought it was a ghost, and they cried out, for they saw him and were terrified. That's logical. And here's what isn't said in all of this that we know. Some of these men, their occupation was fishermen. Do you think they were afraid of a storm on a sea like an average you or me would be? I don't think so. That doesn't mean they didn't have any fear. It just means when they're rowing into a storm, they're probably going, huh, done this a lot of times before in my life, right? I don't think the storm is really what scared them. What scared them was they didn't expect to see a person out there walking on the water at dark in the middle of the lake. That would have been a terrifying sight, right? So they were probably very afraid by that. That makes perfect sense. But immediately he spoke to them and said, take heart, it is I, do not be afraid. So he tells them who he is. And then Peter says, Lord, if it's you, command me to come to you on the water. And he says, come. So Peter got out of the boat and walked on the water and came to Jesus. But when he saw the wind, he was afraid, and beginning to sink, he cried out, Lord, save me. Jesus immediately reached out his hand and took hold of him, saying to him, "Oh, you of little faith, why did you doubt?" And when they got into the boat, the wind ceased. Then they were glad to take him into the boat, and immediately the boat was at the land to which they were going. And those in the boat worshipped him, saying, "Truly, you are the Son of God." I'm not sure where to put this last part, so I put it right there because I think it goes with that. "For they did not understand about the loaves, but their hearts were hardened." I think this response is in relation to this. I think they realize, why did we doubt Jesus? Why did we not think, duh, he can do anything? We've been sent out. We've been healing. We know what Jesus can do. And we said, maybe we should go buy bread from the... I don't know what that exactly means, but their hearts were hardened. I think it's in some reference to their lack of faith in Jesus and being able to handle that miracle. "Truly, you are the Son of God." I think that's maybe a recognition that we should have realized as the Son of God that you could do what you just did back there on that mountain. So I think it just adds a lot to our understanding when we piece the Gospels together and grab those details and try to fit it all. I don't know if I got it perfectly right. I don't know. I might have some things a little bit out of order or not quite right. I think it flows and fits those details as we put those together and think through how these events were happening and what was exactly happening. Here these people are wanting to make Jesus king. He senses that. He gets those disciples out of there. He gets out of there himself. So he's separate from that situation, so they can't do that because the disciples are gone and he's gone. And they're out there struggling. Now we're going to get to why did he send them out there by themselves, not him with them. And then he walks out to them. They get scared. He assures them it's him. Peter actually takes some faith and walks on the water. Amazing that he does that. Jesus says, "Why did you doubt?" They get in the boat and everything stops. The storm stops and they're at the shore. And they go, "Wow, you are the Son of God." Okay, what reasons might Jesus have had for sending the disciples ahead of him? Why would he do that? We know that he could have gone with them. We know that he could have just done what he did at the very end, which is just they hop in the boat and boom, they're at the other side. He could have done anything he wanted to, right? So why does he send the disciples out there? He probably knew that storm was coming too. Pretty sure that he did. Why did he do that? And again, I don't know that I have the answers, but I've got my answers. What are your answers? Scott? Nope. I think that's very feasible, very reasonable. Scott? It's interesting, I think, because if we think about all the things that have occurred just in John, and then remember we've got Matthew, Mark, and Luke mentioning all these other things that are happening, right? There's tons of signs that Jesus is doing and that they are doing that Jesus has given them the ability to do. And we think, how do they doubt him? How do they not understand? How do they struggle with remembering what Jesus has done and what he can do? And then we think, okay, today, how many prayers has Jesus answered, or has God answered for us today in our own lives? And yet we still doubt sometimes, and even doubt enough that we don't even go to God in prayer. Right? Is it really that different? We've seen God at work in our lives, and yet we still doubt, and we still fail to do the things that we should do and believe in the ways that we should. All right. I don't know that, again, that I have the answers. I think your answers are more than reasonable. We didn't say this one, but I think this is one too. Influence of the crowd. So what is the crowd getting ready to do? What do they want to do? Make him king. Okay? I think that Jesus wants his disciples away from that kind of thinking. He does not want them thinking like that, because that is not what he is trying to accomplish. And he understands the crowd's not going to get that, but he's struggling against his own disciples thinking that as well. right? He doesn't want that kind of thinking invading their thinking. It's another test. I think that he's testing to see how they're going to respond to this, okay? I think that he does want to give opportunities to them, which Peter actually takes advantage of an opportunity, which is amazing. And I don't know if this is one or not, but it's hard work, what they're doing, right? And it's going to continue to be hard work, and it's going to get harder. So how do you prepare for hard work? You do hard work, right? You continue to do it, and you continue to do it, and you continue to do it. So he's pushing them purposely. Think again, go back to all the things that prefaced what we just went through. They came back from a mission trip. They're exhausted. They're going to find a place to rest, and they don't get it. And they have to serve 5,000 to 10,000 people. They are exhausted. Oh, yeah, now they're going out and they're rowing 3 to 4 miles for hours on end. It's the middle of the night. They're exhausted, beyond belief exhausted, right? I think Jesus is, it's a life lesson for them. This is going to be hard work. It doesn't stop. It doesn't end. All right. What message is Jesus trying to get across to the crowd? Let's take a look at that. Let's go back to John 6. Verse 22. Let me find my notes here real quick, too. Okay. John chapter 6, verse 22. On the next day, the crowd that remained on the other side of the sea saw that there had been only one boat there, and that Jesus had not entered the boat with his disciples, but that his disciples had gone away alone. Other boats from Tiberias came near the place where they had eaten the bread after the Lord had given thanks. So when the crowd saw that Jesus was not there, nor his disciples, they themselves got into the boats and went to Capernaum, seeking Jesus. When they found him on the other side of the sea, they said to him, "Rabbi, when did you come here?" Jesus answered them, "Truly, truly, I say to you, you are seeking me not because you saw signs, but because you ate your fill of the loaves. Do not work for the food that perishes, but for the food that endures to eternal life, which the Son of Man will give to you. For on him God the Father has set his seal." Then they said to him, "What must we do to be doing the works of God?" Jesus answered them, "This is the work of God, that you believe in him whom he has sent." So they said to him, "Then what sign do you do that we may see and believe you? What work do you perform?" "Our fathers ate the manna in the wilderness, as it is written. He gave them bread from heaven to eat." Jesus then said to them, "Truly, truly, I say to you, it was not Moses who gave you the bread from heaven, but my Father gives you the true bread from heaven. For the bread of God is he who comes down from heaven and gives life to the world." They said to him, "Sir, give us this bread always." Jesus said to them, "I am the bread of life. Whoever comes to me shall not hunger, and whoever believes in me shall never thirst. But I said to you that you have seen me, and you do not believe. All that the Father gives me will come to me, and whoever comes to me I will never cast out. For I have come down from heaven not to do my own will, but the will of him who sent me. And this is the will of him who sent me, that I should lose nothing of all that he has given me, but raise it up on the last day. For this is the will of my Father, that everyone who looks on the Son and believes in him that should have eternal life, and I will raise him up on the last day." What message is Jesus trying to get across to these people?
Coming to him for the sign, but in a sense, in a real sense, he's saying,
kind of ironic, isn't it, that they want to connect him to Moses, but they don't connect that they're like the Israelites. They have the vision, don't they, of what the Messiah should be or who this person Jesus should be. And he doesn't fit with what their vision is. That's not who he is. One last thing before we close this up. So I found this interesting as I was reading through the section that they say to him, what sign will you show us? Right? I don't remember exactly how it's phrased in there. I got to go back and find it. He just showed a sign, right? The exact sign they're asking for. But remember, this probably is not all exactly the same people. Okay? The crowd did follow him, but what happens wherever Jesus goes? So this crowd would have not just been those people that were there where the feeding of the 5,000. It would have been other people intermixed with that as well. People from the surrounding towns, maybe some of the Pharisees. There's crowds coming from all, just a mixture of different people. So it's very likely that someone else who didn't see that was saying, hey, can you show us a sign? What sign? Well, ironically, I just showed you, many of you, that sign. So we'll pick up here and finish this point and then move forward from this point. Thanks for your attention and participation.